Let's get back to the technology phone-in with Fevzi Turkalp at Gadget Detective on Twitter. Let's do some quick-fire questions now. If you want to get yours in, 08085 909 693, or you can text 85058. Fevzi, Alan in Northumberland says, do you get more channels on Freesat than Freeview?
There are slightly different overlap. There are some things you can get on Freesat that you can't get on Freeview, but I mean, in the bulk, they're pretty similar, frankly. There's not much in it. The deciding factor between Freesat and Freeview should be whether you get a decent signal using Freeview. If you don't, go for Freesat. But there's not much in it either way. It does change a bit. The Freeview offering on Freesat offering changes slightly from time to time.
Okay. Marty in Plymouth says, what was the dash cam that you mentioned that you recommended? He's looking at getting one.
It was a Transcend 720, that Brilliant. Particular model.
Thank you very much. Let's take a call now from Val in Glasgow. Val, how can we help?
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
Thank you. I've just bought a new HP computer, a desktop-type computer. It's an all-in-one, The screen, the keyboard are separate. Mm-hmm. And the shop that sold it to me set it up and said they had a problem with my email when they were setting it up. And I can now get my email by going into my BT account.
Yes.
But I can't get my email by just going into sort of Outlook, and it keeps saying to me, coming up with notifications that my BT settings are out of date. So what does that mean? I've had this BT email for years, you know, my email address. I'm not brilliant on a computer. My son does most things for me, but he hasn't been able to solve this problem. And I just wonder what I should do.
That's not great from the company, is it, for Val, who've set up the computer for her and have left her with this problem from the start?
Yeah, that's not great. Val, so when you set up an email address to work on an email client such as Outlook, a program that allows it, so as opposed to going through the web, you need certain pieces of information, including the email address, the password, and the names of two servers. One's called the incoming mail server, and the other one's called the outgoing mail server. And these are addresses, internet addresses that point to these particular servers. Now, those can change over time. And therefore, it is worth speaking to your email provider to ask them which incoming and outgoing servers they recommend you use, because you can even use ones that aren't from your provider. So which ones do they recommend you use? And please, could they give you an up-to-date set of the settings that you need to correctly configure? And their website may also include how to do it in Outlook, because Outlook's obviously one of the more popular programs. So they may even hold your hand step by step and show you that.
I can hear you sighing in frustration there. I know exactly how you feel.
I had no idea what to do. Do I go online to do this? Into BT to do this?
Yeah, I would speak to BT. Let them talk you through it. But at the minimum, they need to give you a list of all the settings required to configure your email, as I say, which will include your password, your email address, your incoming and outgoing mail server, and one or two other things.
Okay.
My suspicion is it's one of those two servers that's maybe no longer used by BT. So it's worth checking with them, and either get them to hold your hand to take you through it as you set it up, which they should do. Otherwise,
they don't speak to me in language I don't understand.
Well, do you know what? If you're confused, Val, which happens to me all the time, without wanting to patronise you at all, what you can do is you can go back to the BBC iPlayer and get your son to listen back to the instructions that Fevzi's been giving and see.
I've written them down.
And then he can help.
And if you speak to their tech support, or in fact, if you go through the support section of their website, you should be directed to a set of instructions specifically.
Right.
Usually there will be a specific set of instructions for Outlook, because every email program works a little bit differently. They do the same thing, but the settings and pages and layout is different. So
it would help if when they put up notices like that on computers, they said, told you what to do,
yes.
Help, but that didn't help. So anyway, thank you very much indeed. I'll do that in the morning.
Val,
my producer is saying in my ear, if you Google BT email server settings, the instructions
BT
come up.
Email
server settings.
Yes.
Server settings.
Then it should
You're
be able to help
you. Breaking up a wee bit. That's fine. Yeah. Okay. BT email server settings.
Brilliant. Good luck with that, Val.
Lovely. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Val. Bye bye.
No worries. Thank
bye.
You.
Bye.
It's just so frustrating. Sometimes you do feel like you're banging your head against a brick wall when something goes wrong and you've no idea
and
where
email,
to go.
And email addresses...
Which is what you're here for.
Setting up email accounts is a nightmare because I've even had it where I've entered the same settings into two machines that I've owned for the same email account. One's worked and one hasn't. And the more you fiddle with it, the more it doesn't work. And in the end... And this is often because of quirks in the software, it's best to delete the account and start again rather than keep editing the account, because you can get yourself into a position where everything is correct and it still doesn't work because the software hasn't applied all the changes properly. Yeah. And at that point, delete it and start again, because you'll get a clean setup in that way.
Okay, let's take another question from Ian in Folkestone, who says, is it true that websites can place lifetime cookies on your PC and you have no way of removing them? How is this allowed? Is it surely an invasion of privacy? Well, we're learning, Ian, that there's no such thing as an invasion of privacy when it comes to computers.
Because there's no privacy. Yeah. Yes, it's true that they can put cookies, which are little packets of information that tell either their software or other piece of software which website you've been and your browsing habits and preferences and things like that. They are lifetime in the sense that they can put ones that don't automatically expire, but there are none that you cannot remove yourself. So what I would suggest, if you're either a Windows or a Mac user, in fact, there's a free piece of software called CCleaner. So that's the letter C followed by the word cleaner. So double C at the front. There are paid versions of that. Don't go for the paid versions, because the free version is excellent and you don't need to pay. And CCleaner has settings where you can set it up to run every time you switch on your machine, and you can tell it which cookies you want to keep in a keep list and tell it to delete everything else every time it runs. Some websites won't work properly or at all unless you allow it to put down cookies, but others it doesn't need it, and you can just experiment by deleting it and see if it still works fine. If it doesn't work, then put it in the keep list. But something like CCleaner is fast, efficient. It will clean out all sorts of other rubbish as well. And it's gentle enough not to. Some of these cleaning apps, they're a bit overzealous and they can actually destabilize the operating systems because they delete things they're not meant to. I've used CCleaner for many, many years and have never had a problem with it knocking lumps off my operating system that it shouldn't. But it keeps everything, you know, spruced up, and it's amazing how much stuff accumulates on your machine hour by hour that it doesn't need to be there. And particularly if you're running an older machine and, you know, you haven't got enough hard drive space, then it's an excellent tool to have and just have it running, you know, as you start up your machine in the background.
Okay, another question on email from Elaine in Newbury. Elaine says, I'm not TV savvy, but I have a smart TV. I'd like to watch live cricket, and someone suggested Roku or Amazon Fire. How easy is it to set up, and could I buy just the programmes I want to watch?
Okay, so... a smart TV means that you have the smarts inside the TV as opposed to a separate box. Those smart TVs tend to be limited in their functionality, and also they tend not to be updated in their functionality in the way that separate boxes are. So the separate boxes you have a choice of include Roku, R-O-K-U, the Amazon Fire TV box or Fire Stick, and the Apple TV box. Those are the biggest names out there at the moment. None of them do everything. So, for example, if you were interested in iTunes content, your iTunes library, then an Apple TV box. If you were interested in having loads of apps and loads of channels available, then the widest range of those is on the Roku box. However, my personal preference is for the Fire TV, because I find it the easiest, quickest, and most intuitive to use. If you're an Amazon Prime customer, it gives you access to that Prime content. It also gives you access to the music library that comes with Prime membership. And it has a new voice interface. And as I mentioned earlier in the program, it has She Who Will Not Be Named built into it now as well, which has only come about in the last 2 weeks or so. So for most general use, it's that, particularly if you're an Amazon Prime customer. But none of them have everything. So what you need to do is check the availability of the channels that you want. Most of them will allow you to run, for example, Netflix. But there are exceptions because some companies don't like their competitors and won't play nicely with them. Mm. So you really need to have a clear idea of what content and channels you want to watch and then check to see what's currently available.
Okay, a question from Duncan, who says, should I have my tablet and phone, both Android, covered by McAfee security, like my computer is, as I use both to email and surf the web?
Okay, so opinions on the best security software differ, and I will give you my opinion, which is based on experience, but other people will have a different opinion. McAfee is not my favourite. It isn't the one that I would choose. Other people love it. That's fine. That's good for them, but I can only call it as I see it. I would tend to go for something like Norton from Symantec, or Kaspersky, or ESET, E-S-E-T. I find these more effective and lighter in terms of machine resources. In terms of the different platforms, so now you can buy, there's a deal on, I saw a deal on a well-known online retailer's website today for £10. They had a 1 year, three devices subscription for a tenner with Norton. And it allowed you to cover Mac, Windows PC, and I think iOS. I'm not sure if Android was included or not, but you need to check for that. You should now, we are at the point where you should be trying to protect your smartphone and tablet as well. The software tools for them from the main providers are not quite as good as for their desktop and laptop offerings yet. It will improve, but they don't have the same amount of functionality, but even some is better than none. So I would say, yes, try and protect those machines. Yes, try and get one of those products where one license will allow you to cover all your devices, even if they're, Android or iOS from Apple or Mac or Windows PC. Try and get one of those. Most of the companies offer that already. And, look for other people's recommendations, but those are mine.
We've got a question from Hayden in Birmingham who says, morning to you both. I've got an old laptop that I don't use anymore, but I'd like to give away to someone who's in need. He wants to know how to make sure he's deleted absolutely everything off that laptop. He says he's got no disk, so he can't do a system restore. And this is a really good one, isn't it? Because I know that we've got an old desktop computer that's been in the garage now for about 5 years because we're too frightened to throw it away, not knowing what's on it. But we don't want to take it to a computer shop because then they've got access to what's on it and how do you check. So it's still in the garage.
It depends how safe you want to be. If you wanted to be absolutely safe, you remove the hard drive, you take it out, you put some big nails through it with a hammer, and then you burn it. I'm not joking. I mean, the problem is there are all sorts of ways of deleting. So simple deletion or formatting is not good enough because that's the way that works is imagine a book with all the contents of the book there and at the back of the book there's an index. When you delete or format, all you're doing is the equivalent of tearing out the index, which tells people where the files are, or in the case of the book, what's inside the various parts of the book. But the data is still potentially there. Okay. If you want to do a sort of belt and braces deletion, then you can use a program such as KillDisk. That's K-I-L-L-D-I-S-K. And what that does is it repeatedly writes zeros and ones in various patterns over your files. It writes and rewrites and rewrites, and you can do it to what's called Department of Defense standards, which is an American Department of Defense that means that it doesn't mean it's impossible to recover, but it means that someone would really have to be interested in you, like a government with the resources to recover the data once that's been done. So for most people that's sufficient, but for the more paranoid amongst us, we remove the drive and destroy it physically.
Another question from Sam on Twitter. Sam says, how does Apple TV work and how does it compare with Virgin Media or Sky? I've never heard of it.
So Apple TV, I assume that we're talking about. What does it say there?
Appy, A-P-P-Y. I'm guessing, yeah, you're right.
No, I think that's Apple TV. Apple TV allows you to put the TV shows and other content, as I said, your iTunes content. So it can be music, it can be films. So if you live in the sort of the Apple ecosystem, it's a good choice. I have to say, having owned a number of Apple TVs over the years, the current one has got the most god-awful remote control on it I've ever seen. And Apple, who are meant to be kings of the user interface, really dropped the ball. It's frustrating, and it's nobbled. Apple have nobbled it in the sense that it can run apps, but the apps that they let you run are the most basic, poor apps. And therefore, it's great if you want iTunes content, but otherwise I would look elsewhere as a streaming box.
Let me just interrupt you, Fevzy, because we've just discovered Appy TV is a thing.
Oh, go on. What is it?
There you go. It seems to be, from what we can work out, it seems to be another TV box.
Oh, well, I don't know it. I've not used it.
But I'm sure you by quarter to four, after you've got air, off air, I'm sure you'll know absolutely everything about it.
Come and say hello on Twitter and I'll look it up. Appy TV.
Appy TV, APPY, yes. Another text here. Let's go to, we've had that one, haven't we? Here we go. I love it when Richard the Milkman texts in, I have to say. Richard says, as someone who has, this is when we were talking earlier about the dangers of being too, it was it Josh who called and wanted to get a dumb phone instead of a smartphone?
Yes.
Richard the Milkman says, as someone who has no social media, no smartphone, never played a video game, and is married to someone like-minded, it's really alarming to see friends and family so addicted to all this. Yeah. It's becoming like that episode of Doctor Who where the Cybermen take over the Earth by giving people addictive devices.
Yes,
you
that
should
go in the ear.
Try abstaining and see what I mean. It's bizarre to watch, says Richard.
Have you seen the new Apple AirPods, these wireless AirPods that fit inside the ear and they just hang down a little bit like an earring? They look like something straight out of that episode with the Cybermen.
Oh my goodness.
I think, you know, it all comes true in the end, doesn't it? I mean, I think we should just stop resisting now.
I'm going to use the name again. I do apologise to anyone who's getting frustrated by this, but someone wants to know, how well does Alexa work with Windows 10 via Wi-Fi?
Well, Alexa doesn't run on Windows 10, so
there you go.
She is within the Echo box or the Fire TV box. And if you've got a smartphone, you can run an app which is like a companion app on your smart device. But I haven't seen it running on Windows. It doesn't run natively on Windows 10. There might be a support app for it, okay, but it doesn't run on Windows 10.
John in Marylebone.
By the way, sorry, within Windows 10, there is a similar function called Cortana from Microsoft.
They've all got them. Apple needs to catch up, really, doesn't it?
It is the future. What it was last week.
John in Marylebone says, I have a BlackBerry, is it PRIV or Priv Google hybrid phone, and operate Windows 10 Outlook on my laptop. I've never been able to sync my diary between the two. It's very frustrating that I can't accept an Outlook diary invitation on my phone and have to copy appointments manually on my phone. Any ideas?
So you can sync a Windows phone with Windows on your desktop or laptop PC, but unlike almost any other combination of phone and Windows, you can't do it by connecting a wire with the built-in software. What Microsoft insists you do is you synchronize the two devices by uploading the contents of your phone into a cloud-based account, that's to say an internet-based account. So all your private data has to go up into the cloud and be at risk and sit on American servers, and that's not an ideal way to do it. I've had conversations with Microsoft about this, because I can plug an iPhone into a Windows device and it will sync via a cable. I can plug an Android device into a Windows desktop or laptop and it will sync via a cable, which is secure. But when I want to sync a Microsoft mobile phone with a Microsoft desktop, I have to do it via the cloud. And that's a decision that they've made, and they claim not to understand why anyone would have any reservations about that. Mm-hmm. I have reservations about it. That said, there are third-party pieces of software that will allow you to do it, but then you have to trust the people that produce that software not to send the contents of your phone off. I think that's probably still safer than knowingly putting it in the cloud.
Another question here from Des, who says, can you recommend any easy to understand books so that I can learn how to manage photos from my phone to laptop and general maintenance, making my laptop work faster? I'm not tech minded at all and can only send emails and watch the iPlayer on my laptop.
Yeah, I can't recommend a book to you for two reasons. It's a long time since I've looked at books as a source of technology information. And
speaks volumes, Fevzi.
Literally, well done. but it is because books are, you know, are relatively expensive sources of information, and they're out of date as soon as they're
gone into print. I was just
going
to say, they must just go out of date so quickly
that it's almost not worth doing. I mean, you can look at the dummies guides; they're pretty good, but you know, any printed book will go out of date. I think this is a case where Google or your favorite search engine is your friend, and try and ask. Search for the right sorts of questions. You will find that there are some excellent online resources that will have it, but it will take a little bit of teasing out, both to get the subject you want and the sort of level of the amount of knowledge assumed by the guide. But there are some excellent online guides. By the way, I've been experimenting with a new search engine because, you know, I'm getting rather reticent of sharing my whole life with Google. There is another search engine which is not as well known as the others, called DuckDuckGo, DuckDuckGo. And it is a search engine which is not as good as Google in terms of its results. You can use it. I use it most of the time, but occasionally I still do need to use Google to get the very best search results. But it is a search engine that's predicated on preserving your privacy to the greatest possible extent. They don't build up.
Let's finish on that one then, about your concerns about Google privacy. Sam's got concerns as well on Twitter. Sam says, Google requiring new privacy terms to be accepted. How much should one worry about privacy if accepting any alternatives? And
I think the problem with Google, and it's not only Google, but Google... have such a wide range of services, you know, Google Maps, the calendar, the docs, you know, to write your own cloud-based documents, and of course Gmail. All these different services are all collecting information on you. And a while back, they changed their terms and conditions, it's quite a while back now, so that they could actually combine all the information that they get on you from all the different services. Before, they were all separate and they didn't combine them, and they couldn't combine them under their terms and conditions. And now, so any single piece of information about you may seem innocuous, but when you combine it all, that's where the power of the information is. They can profile you. You know, the joke with Google is that they know when your daughter's pregnant before you do. I would posit that they know who the father is as well. They really do know everything about you, and they use that, you know, to target advertising, so they can sell advertising to advertisers very specifically. So if they want a certain age group, and you vote a certain way, and you buy certain things, and you've got certain hobbies and whatever else it is about you, they can profile you completely, and they might send someone a list of 100 names, but it might be the only 100 names that they're interested in. So it's very targeted.
Absolutely.
The problem with that is we know that the intelligence services and other government and non-governmental players hack that information or make arrangements with companies for the information, and you lose your privacy at that point. And most of us probably we wouldn't worry about governments having certain information, but you have to worry about what type of government you might have next. And if you have, for example, an authoritarian government, imagine what a dictator could have done with that information, say Hitler in the 40s, it doesn't bear thinking about. And I do think it's difficult, because the way that services are being created now is they're not standalone services. Everything is connected, everything is increasingly in the cloud, and we're losing control of that. And unless there's a lot of pushback from people, and unless they understand what it is they're giving up. You know, you get a free app. It's not free. You're paying for it with your data. Mm. Yeah, and you need to really think about what information you share. Think about providing false information to different services, just to confuse the hell out of their algorithms, if nothing else.
You always do this, don't you? You always finish making me shudder. Every single time.
And that's just my general demeanour, right?
No, thank you as ever. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Fevzi. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Speak to you again in a few weeks.
Cheers, Faye.